This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good Thursday to you. And by the way, that's a throwback Thursday as we get things rolling here on Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. All right, it's official. The baseball players are locked out. The owners locked them out when the collective bargaining agreement didn't come together last night at midnight. It wasn't a surprise. Nobody expected the collective bargaining agreement to be hammered out when both sides weren't really mistalking or doing anything that was productive leading up until that point. But if you're a baseball fan and you're very nervous that the season's not going to start on time or whatnot, chill for a bit. We've got some time. It's December. What you usually get is something hard and, you know, fast. And then as you get closer and closer to where the money is going to be made, both sides start going, all right, let's see if we can hammer this out a little bit. You know, come see this issue back in, you know, maybe February when pitchers and catchers are supposed to report. And if we're still in lockout mode and it looks like we're not coming together, then we'll worry about whether or not the season's going to get underway. I remember the 2011 lockout in the NFL, and I remember I was working in Denver at the time, and of course everybody was concerned about the Broncos and whatnot, and time and time again I would have these NFL experts on to talk about the latest negotiations, where exactly were we and what was going on. It was the summer of 2011. Privately, they would tell me, you know, this is really bad. This is really, really bad. And then on the air, they would kind of say the same thing, right? They would go, oh, don't worry. When we get closer to the season, it'll all be good. They'll work it out. But then off the, you know, when the mics would be off, they would say, I'm telling you, we might not even have a season. It is so bad. They hate each other so bad. And I'd be like, okay, that's a little nerve wracking. But what ended up happening is those fears that those guys were telling me off the air ended up being exactly what they told me on the air, which was when push came to shove, yeah, they sat down and went, let's not miss anything because the money's coming in and we really want to make sure the money's coming in. And so they hashed it out and we ended up having a season in 2011 without any disruption. I think that's what Major League Baseball is going for right now. All right, Cowboys and Saints tonight. Taysom Hill is going to start at quarterback for New Orleans. Is it a must-win for the Cowboys? I don't like using that term, but is it? What about the Saints? Is it a must-win for them? As I said, I don't like to use that term, but is it? All right, we'll talk about that, plus the issues that are leading to the lockout, and of course, what we're doing for Throwback Thursday. It's all coming up as Wake Up Call gets underway as we roll along in Hour 1 on SportsMap Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
Well, if you hear this song, you got to think 1997, right? Well, maybe you don't. Maybe you just think late 90s. I'm just being specific. It's Throwback Thursday, so we are taking you back until 1997 because on this date, Latrell Sprewell reached out, grabbed PJ Carlissimo's throat, and started choking him. He was suspended for a year, but that was later reduced to 68 games, cost him $6 million in 1997 money. Which, what is that today? Probably $2.3 billion? I don't know. I don't know how to do inflation math. But Latrell Sprewell coaching PJ Carlissimo. Here's the details of that moment back in 1997, 24 years ago. Carlissimo was the head coach of the Golden State Warriors at the time. You may know him as the head coach of the Seton Hall Pirates back in the late 80s, where he led the Pirates to the championship game against Michigan in 1989. But nevertheless, was a head coach in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors. And he did not have a very good relationship with Latrell Sprewell. He jawed at him a lot, was really hard on him, and Sprewell really used to drive him crazy. And then one day in practice, they were having a closed practice, and PJ Carlissimo got on Latrell Sprewell's case for not passing hard enough in practice. In fact, Bimbo Coles, who pointed this out later on, said, it's very embarrassing to a player when a coach criticizes your passing. You just feel like the coach is just riding you for no reason, especially passing in practice. And Sprewell he kept letting this boil over because Carlissimo was a very, very tough coach, a very aggressive, in-your-face style coach. and Sprewell let it build up until finally that broke and Kalishima was yelling at him. He crossed the court to go talk to him, and Sprewell reached out and grabbed his throat and started choking him. He was asked to leave practice. He came back. He threw a punch. It was just a complete disaster. But that happened on this date 24 years ago. It's still a thing. Obviously, it's still the thing that Sprewell is known for, even though he went on to have a career with the New York Knicks and later the Minnesota Timberwolves. For all intents and purposes, had a pretty good NBA life, but he'll never overcome the choking incident of PJ Carlissimo. But one thing was known about this, that there was a moment after he got traded to the Knicks that there were two camps in the NBA back in the late 90s. And when you were either on the Sprewell side, because he was sort of this anti-establishment kind of hero, or you were the kind of person that looked at the NBA and went, well, I think they're all thugs anyway, and this proves that, right? So there was kind of these two extreme camps that were going on, and it was kind of a tough time for the league. But nevertheless, it's sort of one of the more famous moments in NBA history when Latrell Sprewell choked his coach, PJ Carlissimo. Now, I will tell you, I have met many people who knew PJ Carlissimo very well. Were some players that I met that worked under him and some people that just worked with him in the media. And he's very aggressive. Let's just say that he's a nice guy from what I've been told. I've never personally met him, but people will say he is a real aggressive guy. Like he has a style that does get on your nerves. It just drives you crazy. And for some people that's why Sprewell wasn't exactly like people didn't come out and say, like players didn't say, oh man, he crossed the line. No, he crossed the line. Some players were like, yeah, I know that guy. And you know, he did what I would have done, or he did what I wanted to do and couldn't do. So that was the story behind the 1997 incident. So we've got that on Throwback Thursday today. So you'll hear a lot of songs from the late 90s. This was a time for me where I was dating my wife at the time. Living in Florida, so this should at least bring some memories of that going on date nights in the greater St. Pete, Tampa area. All right, so Major League Baseball is in their lockout. It happened last night at midnight. It is, like I said at the top of the hour, it does not come at any surprise. It is done. The players and owners have reached an impasse. No more negotiations for right now, and free agency stops, signings stop, trades stop. Players can't go to the facility. It is done, separate. Now, will they come back to the tables? Of course they will. When? I don't know. What are they hammering out? Some economics. What is the big sticking point that is between the two? Well, it's not like it used to be in the old days. What it used to be in the old days was a hard salary cap. The owners always wanted a hard salary cap. They wanted their sport to be run like the NFL and to be run like the NBA. And the players have said no. And the players, to their credit, even though it did cost us a World Series back in 94, they struck and they never got a hard cap in the sport. All of the problems that baseball has had when it has come to the possible implementation of that, the players have won that battle. They've given some concessions, but they've won that battle. But this is not that. The owners haven't even brought up a hard cap in the negotiations. What the players are wanting, more or less, is a change to the arbitration structure and a change to service time. You probably have heard me and LeRon talk about this where, you get a superstar, a young player, and you kind of leave him in the minors a little bit so that when he gets out of the minors, he's a little bit older, and that means he has to stay within your organization that one extra year before he becomes a free agent. So what has that led to in terms of where Major League Baseball is in terms of its economics? Well, for starters, have you noticed like Fernando Tatis Jr. signing a 13-year deal, right? When he's a young man, seeing young players doing this where you're like, wow, 13 years, 12 years, oh, wow, 10 years. Well, they do that because they are becoming free agents later and later. And what is happening is they can't get paid the money that they really, really want in free agency when they reach a certain age. They may be able to get $35 million, for example, but they may only get it for a three-year period rather than a long-term deal that they want at 28, 29. So they sign these long-term deals when they're 22, and that locks them in, even though we don't know what the economics will look like 10, 15 years from now. And they're doing that because, again, when they reach free agency, they're not going to get another additional 10-year deal unless they're an absolute mega superstar. And, you know, no matter how good you are at this sport, there's no guarantee what injuries and time will do to your skill set. So the players are like, well, is it possible that we can change the system a little bit so players are entering free agency a little earlier in their career? And remember too, I know this is crazy, but when we talk about these kind of things, and we saw it in the NFL too. When fans, because don't get me wrong, I'm with everybody when it comes to these kind of things. I roll my eyes half the time because it's billionaires against millionaires and all of that. But we tend to look at the economic situation of the people on the higher end, right? Rather than those in either the middle or the bottom part of the end. And that is really the sticking point, right? The union protects Tom Brady in the NFL as well as protects the guy that is probably going to get cut at the end of the season and never play again. Right. That's their job. Their job is to ensure that the superstars are in a comfortable financial position to gain or benefit from the redistribution of the wealth that the league has created. But that also has to trickle down to the guy that's probably got a 3-year career at best and is probably going to get into sports radio or real estate or whatever he is when he's done with his playing career. Right. That's the same thing that's going on here. We know that we see a Max Scherzer at 36 get a 3-year deal that's going to pay him on average $43 million a year. That's not where this sticking point is. The sticking point is to the young guy that's 22, that's not going to be free agent until he's 28. And then what kind of money is he going to make at 28 where he could make at 24, 25? Because that really sets the bar for more monies going to the players, right? If you're starting to pay 25-year-olds big-time contracts because they enter free agency, there does have a trickle-down effect into the overall economics of the players. That's the big – so that right there is the big, big, big sticking point. You will hear things like – designated hitter in the National League, that's on the table because players, of course, that means designated hitters can be in the National League now, and that means more jobs. That also means longer service time for players, because think about this. If you're a hitter, if you're a slugger and you want to be a DH, right, maybe, the legs don't work as well, so you can't play outfield anymore, but you can swing the bat and you can be a DH. Well, right now, there's only, 15 teams that you can go to negotiate contracts with as a designated hitter. Well, they want all 30, right? That's what they want. They want all 30. So that's going to be on the table. But those are the small sticking points that will come and go. Postseason, how many teams are in it, revenue sharing on that, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is sort of the small stuff. The big thing the players are looking for is let's rehaul the arbitration system and let's rehaul service time so that our younger guys can get the bigger contracts when they're young, because it helps out everybody. NBA went through this too. The NBA went through this, years ago, where, the free agency, you get guys in high school, and by the time they finish out their rookie contract, they're like 22. And this is one of the reasons NBA players don't like the one and done rule for college. They're like, if you can get an NBA guy in here at 18 and then he becomes a free agent at, say, 22, 23, that helps us all out. So that's basically where we're at right now.
Yeah, because everyone hated that Chris Bryant rule.
Right. Exactly.
And
it's terrible.
I know there's other players, but that's the one, the most infamous one I remember was Chris Bryant, where it's like, oh, if we keep him down for 2 weeks, we can have him for 6 years.
Yeah, and that was terrible because everybody was waiting for Chris Bryant to come up, and he had no business being in the minor leagues at his talent level at that point.
And every Cubs knew it. And every year I know we have a player that's like that.
Yeah, all the time, right? And they want to get rid of that. They want to create a system where the owners wouldn't do that because there would be absolutely no benefit to them. You take the benefit away, and then Chris Bryant can just come up and play.
And then aren't they trying to get a little more coin down to the minor league system?
Yeah, they are. They're trying to do that.
We've talked about it. Those guys make about $1,300 a month.
Oh, they make nothing. Oh my God, they make nothing. That's a scary. I mean, think about it. That's a scary position to be in when you're young and you're a professional baseball player. Because if you're not quite good enough to make the majors, you don't. It's not a glamorous life to be in the minors.
Not at all.
It doesn't pay very well. The travel's terrible. The accommodations stink. Usually have like seven guys in an apartment. It's really, really bad. You don't make a good living. And all you're doing is chasing a dream with, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of other people. And you're hoping to hope that you can hit the curveball at the next level. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't feel as bad because I think when you're young, I think you kind of should be broke. You know, like I think
yeah,
it helps.
Yeah.
Like my wife and I talk to our kids all the time. And my wife and I talk to our kids about the time we were first married and we didn't have much money and we were both kind of kickstarting our careers. And one time we paid all our bills. We didn't have enough money and we used our gas card to buy dinner. Like we went into a gas station to find food to eat for dinner that we used our gas card. And while we struggled and hated that then, now we're like, hey, you know what? It was kind of brought us together and we struggled together. So I think when you're young, it's cool. But what they live with is kind of bad. I don't think you should live seven guys to an apartment and, yep. you know, make enough money to survive.
I mean,
it almost sounds like
that one fake football team.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Where they were skipping out on all. What was the name of that again?
I can't remember.
Oh, Bishop something, I think. Yeah, and they were skipping out on the hotels.
But there was a fat cat making all the money, and then everyone else is like, we barely had enough money for bread.
Exactly. So that's where we're at right now. All right, coming up next, the NFL tonight. Is it a must-win for Dallas, and is it a must-win for New Orleans? And again, and I say this, and I said it at the top, I hate that term, but maybe there's some truth to it. We'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call.
The Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
1997, Latrell Sprewell choking PJ Carlissimo in Golden State Warriors practice. Have a car problem but don't know where to go? Maybe you're on the road trip when your car breaks down. Let O'Reilly Auto Parts help. With the O'Reilly Auto Parts shop referral program, take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click Find a Repair Shop to find a reparable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, so tonight, Dallas taking on New Orleans. Taysom Hill getting the start at quarterback. He's been dealing with a foot injury, though, so I don't know how Taysom Hilly he's going to be. I mean, I want to see.
He's going to be a pocket passer?
Maybe. Yeah. I thought you were going to say pocket knife because he's a Swiss Army knife.
Ooh.
Right? I thought you were going to say because he was limited, he was going to be a pocket knife.
I think that's normally what he is, but if he has a foot injury.
Right? What is he? Is he one of those forks that pop out?
He's a spork.
He's a spork? Well, I mean, you know what? Taysom Hill with a foot injury he's not Taysom Hill. Like, that's not Taysom. That's not why we like watching him. I hope
no,
he's okay.
We like watching him trying to figure out, okay, what does Sean Payton see in him?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, they say he's been healthy in practice, but I don't know what healthy means. Like, I'm putting that in quotes. You can't see me doing the air quotes on the radio, but I'm doing the air quotes on the radio. Healthy. Well, he's got like plantar fasciitis, right? It's like, that's horrible.
That's probably what, Antonio Gates would have said a whole lot more records had it not been for plantar fasciitis.
Right, exactly.
Every single season, I remember seeing just like, he's going to miss 4 or 5 games because of plantar fasciitis. It's like, I don't even still really unsure what that is.
Right. This is what he said to reporters at practice on Tuesday. I think that's what we've been working through in terms of pain management and tolerance. That's been the challenge. I think we're getting to the point where I'm going to be dealing with the pain. It's just getting to the point where it doesn't limit functionality. Yeah, well, that's good luck with that because pain limits functionality a lot of times. It's one of the reasons pain exists in the first place. Like when you have pain, it's not your body being cruel. It's your body being nice to you because the pain is supposed to say, don't do that. No, don't be walking on a dislocated knee. No. Don't be lifting up your shoulder above your head when you have a torn rotator cuff. Like the pain is supposed to make your body go, hey, sometimes you have to fight through the pain. Don't get me wrong. But the pain is supposed to be, hey, something's wrong. right? But he's like, nah, I just have to play the whole season with this pain. Well, I don't think that, and again, court players do that all the time. Your players say, look, at, you know, that famous saying, at this point, everybody's hurt. And that's true. Everybody's hurt, like at this point. Everybody's bumped and bruised and hurt. But what Hill is trying to say is, I have a lot of pain. I'm learning to manage it, but I'm trying to make sure my pain doesn't limit what I do. But I don't think you can be 100% effective like Taysom Hill is when he's healthy when you have pain. I think the pain will prevent you from being as fast as you need to be, as quick as you need to be, allow you to cut the way you want to cut. So I don't think his ability to overcome pain, it's one thing to tolerate pain, it's another to do exactly what you used to do with it. That's just, I don't know if that's going to happen. Right? I mean, you remember like we talked about with Tiger Woods where Tiger was talking about his leg and he always felt like, well, there's always going to be an issue with it. It may be painful, but Tiger can walk on it. But I think for a while, Tiger's going to look different when he walks because of his leg regrowing. Now, with Hill and this foot injury, I think you're going to notice it tonight when he starts doing whatever Taysom Hill did to make him worthy of the money that he's making now. Yeah, I think the limitations are going to be there.
No, I think you're right. I mean, you may not see it in the first drive.
Right.
But then when it comes down to crunch time, third quarter, fourth quarter, and your body's taking a few beatings here and there, that's probably when you're going to see it. You're probably going to see that limitation that, you know, doesn't make Taysom Hill Taysom Hill.
That's right. So I'm interested in seeing how he overcomes that. And maybe tomorrow when we talk about it, but like, wow, for a guy that has the plantar fasciitis, he certainly looked good. Like, maybe we'll do that tomorrow. I don't know.
Either that or we're going to be saying, he was lying.
Exactly. Yeah, right? He was over-exaggerating. The Dallas Cowboys were, you know, his victim. He fell right for that old trick.
That's right. He just has plantar. He doesn't have fasciitis.
No, not at all. But, again, do I think it's a must-win for the Dallas Cowboys? No. They still got a pretty comfortable lead in the division. And I'm not going to, you know, we talked to Bobby Belt about this yesterday. Must win is very, that's a little too hard of a term to use this at this point in the season. There's still a lot of games left, but I'd be really careful because you have to still play Washington twice. And for whatever reason, Washington believes they can beat anybody. And right now showing that they kind of can. But I think for the Saints, they're 5-6. And I think if you're the Saints, you do need to win this game. You can't. Right now, they're on a 4-game losing skid. A 5-game losing skid puts them in a position where now you really got to win out if you really want to make the postseason, right? You really got to start winning some games. And I think they're 5-7, to be honest with you. I think they're 5-6 because they had their bye already. I think for the Saints, this is more of a desperate moment than it is for the Cowboys. But if I'm the Cowboys, I do want to be careful here because I think one of the problems that we have with Dallas being the kind of team that they are, I mean, in terms of public, public perception is, you know, the Cowboys stand out more than other teams, right? Because of who they are. Dallas, there's kind of a tier of teams in terms of popularity, in terms of media attention, and Dallas is kind of on top of that list. So when the Cowboys do things, right, sign Dak Prescott or pick up this player or trade this player or cut this player or bring in this troubled player, whatever they may do, it's magnified a bit than if Tampa Bay does it or Jacksonville does it or even the Bears do it or something like that because of the Dallas Cowboys. So every year we go into the season and we wonder how good are the Dallas Cowboys. And then when they're good, it's not that they're having a good season. We really magnify their good season. Now, if Dallas were to lose tonight and kind of fall back a bit into a division that's weak, it's going to really shine. Like the media is really going to start paying attention to the what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys narrative. Whereas earlier this season, when they were winning games and dominating and were in our top five a lot because of the way they were playing and who they were beating, it was like that too, right? Everybody was loving Dallas. They were in the top five in passing and rushing. They had the number one scoring offense in the league at one point. Dak could do no wrong. I mean, they were just winning games and winning games by a lot. But if you start losing, and if they were to lose tonight, that's 4 of 5, right? Then people are going to go, ha-ha, Jerry, we once believed in this team, now we don't believe in this team, and good luck fighting off the bottom feeders of your division because you're sinking right into the pit with them. And I think that's what you would see tonight if the Cowboys were to lose. If the Saints lose, their playoff hopes are going to be over. I think they're just going to be over. All right, it's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
1997 on a Throwback Thursday, for PJ Carlissimo, the Golden State Warriors choked at practice by Latrell Sprewell. Sprewell was suspended for a year, but it was reduced to 68 games on appeal. He lost $6 million in 1997 money, which is a lot back then. It's a lot today. It was one of the more, tougher things to swallow for David Stern. Now, he dealt with a lot in his time as commissioner. I was talking about David Stern to a friend of mine the other day, and we were just having a conversation about, you know, different people in sports and whatnot. And I said, you know, I said, I've always liked David Stern in the NBA for what he was able to put up with. Like, just a league that was dealing with, you know, you hear it all the time, like the cocaine of the 70s. Then he got Magic and Larry and maximizing that and turning it into the NBA to what it is now. We were talking about sort of like influential people in sports. And, you know, so we talked about like Al Davis, for example. And I said, you know, Al Davis is one of those figures in the NFL that he really helped grow the league. You may not like Al Davis and disagree with things he did, you know, moving from Oakland to Los Angeles back to Oakland. But Al Davis fought with Pete Rozelle because he did believe in certain things. He did believe that the NFL needed to go in certain directions. Whether you agree with him or not, he did force the NFL's hand. He challenged the commissioner on a lot of things. And in a way, because his whole life was football, he was a massively influential figure in the growth of the NFL. David Stern was in the same boat. He's a massively influential figure in the game of basketball, where it is today compared to where it was when he took over as commissioner. This was one of those situations back in 1997 that he had to deal with, and he had to deal with a public who did not really care about the backstory between Latrell Sprewell and P.J. Carlissimo. I didn't care that it was just a man frustrated by his boss who was driving him crazy and he just lashed out. You know, they put a hands on another man. You know, that's all they cared about. They didn't care about why, because there's really no excuse for why. It was an attack. It was a physical attack when verbally you could spar. He could have had a sparring match with Carlissimo, jawing back and forth, but instead he chose to be physical. So, yeah, did he deserve the punishment? Sure, he absolutely did. But as I said at the top of the earlier this hour, he was treated by some as this sort of rebellious hero against a coach like Carlissimo, who was really hard to deal with. You know, you talk about coaches that go from college to the pros and not understanding the professionalism of the game. We've been talking about this with the coaching carousel in college football, how coaches go from college into the NFL and then realize, man, this is not the kind of athlete I enjoy coaching, where it's a business and it's a job and it's professional and I'm dealing with their agents, and I like to deal with young men who they can come in and I can play them or not play them, and I don't have to hear about it from 20 different, you know, entities as to why my multi-million dollar athlete is sitting on the bench. Carlissimo benched Latrell Sprewell one time. He was the team's leading scorer. And so there was just a lot of bad blood between the two. But on this date 24 years ago, it kind of made the big news. So that's our Throwback Thursday today as we continue along. I am so looking forward to this weekend, these football games. I am really looking forward to them from the standpoint of what the committee is going to be watching.
Yes.
Right? That's what I'm watching. For my own personal entertainment, sure. Right? But if we go into these games this weekend, and there's a couple games on Friday, and there's a couple, you know, obviously the games are on Saturday. If we go into these games with the glasses of what will the committee be thinking of this, that to me is more interesting. And I'll give you an example. So, like, Baylor is playing Oklahoma State. Now, if you followed the rankings on Tuesday, Oklahoma State, with one loss to Iowa State unranked, is ahead of Notre Dame. So Oklahoma State's been getting a lot of love because they play really good defense, and, you know, they now are in a position to win the Big 12. They're playing ninth-ranked Baylor. Oklahoma State is ranked fifth, and they're just waiting to jump right into the college football playoff as soon as there's an opening. Now, If Oklahoma State plays Baylor and Baylor wins, Oklahoma's playoff chances are done. That'll be their second loss. They're not going to get in. But if Oklahoma State wins that game, but let's say they win that game and it's sloppy and it doesn't look good. Well, if I'm on the committee and I said, well, I liked Oklahoma State over Notre Dame, whose only loss came to Cincinnati, who we all love. I need to figure out my decision on Oklahoma State. Are they still better beating Baylor in the Big 12 championship game, getting that extra game, that 13th game, over Notre Dame sitting at 12 with 12 games at 11-1? Now, there's a lot. We'll talk to Jerry Palm about this next hour. There's been a lot of speculation. We talked about this yesterday. A lot of speculation that the committee chose Oklahoma State over Notre Dame because they're allowed to punish a team, and I'm using punishing air quotes too, the second time I've done it on the show, people. They're allowed to sort of judge a team by a missing element, and that missing element is Brian Kelly. So they're not looking at Notre Dame as the season that's in the books. They're looking at Notre Dame right now with Marcus Freeman, the defensive coordinator, taking over the helm and likely to be their new head coach next season. So there's a belief that Notre Dame is getting hit because Brian Kelly chose to leave right now. And Oklahoma State, again, whose only loss this season came against Iowa State, but unranked, not to number four Cincinnati like Notre Dame, that they're punishing Notre Dame and giving the benefit to Oklahoma State. And if Oklahoma State should really look, you know, look not so good in a sloppy game or whatnot, do they still like Oklahoma State over Notre Dame? Now, the other game, of course, that's going to have a lot of my personal attention is Alabama and Georgia. Because, Ron, you and I have said this time and time again, what do you do with a two-loss Alabama team that gives Georgia everything it could handle? What do you do with a two-loss Alabama team that takes Georgia to the wire? What would you do with a two-loss Alabama team that may lose to Georgia in overtime? Now, look, if Alabama wins the game, they're in, okay? So and Georgia's in. So that's nothing. That's not a scenario to worry about.
That's the one we don't even want to talk about.
Yeah, that's not fun, right? If Alabama wins, two SEC teams are in. Everybody's fighting for the other two spots.
Big one.
Boring.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Been there, done that. What I'm curious of is the Alabama close, I can't believe they lost close to Georgia, where now you've got an Alabama team where it's like, wow, that looked like one of the best teams in college football right there.
And if we're putting the committee hat on, do we sit there and go, God, that would have been a great national champion game.
Right. Hmm. Right.
How can we make that happen?
Let's get that together again. And there you have it, right? So that's the scenario I'm really paying attention to. Now, obviously,
what if it ends up, I remember us saying this back, I don't, God, it was 2018 maybe, yeah, when the Chiefs played the Rams. It was supposed to be in Mexico, but they couldn't get it. They couldn't get their act together, so I can't remember where it was moved. Maybe to LA.
I think it was moved to LA, yeah.
But it was one of those high scoring games that, you know, defense didn't matter. It was like 50-52 or something like that. And just something insane. And we all came back that Monday going, or that Tuesday going, can we have that again?
Right. Yes, you know, exactly.
I'm tapping my arm. Give me more.
That could happen here. That could happen in Atlanta.
I mean, if we have that in Alabama, like you said, loses on a last second field goal. Maybe they lose in overtime. If I'm the committee, Alabama's four, right?
That's the problem. It would end up being a semifinal matchup because Alabama with two losses.
So then I guess you got to. That's the other caveat to it. You got to justify them being three, and maybe keeping Cincinnati at four.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you got to go, well, they did almost beat Georgia, and you're still Cincinnati,
and you're
so
still
you
undefeated.
Stay right there. You're not undefeated, but you stay right there.
But we just beat top 25 Houston.
Yeah, I know. But they almost beat Georgia. But they lost twice. Never mind. I get it. You love Alabama. All right. Obviously, Cincinnati against Houston. What kind of game are we getting at Cincinnati? Michigan against Iowa for the Big Ten title. What if Iowa pulls off the upset and sends Michigan packing back to Ann Arbor with two losses? Oh, this could be fun this weekend, couldn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, imagine the fun scenario, too. Like, you know, say, you know, Georgia wins, right? But then everyone else loses. Does the committee have the intestinal fortitude to put Notre Dame in the top four.
See, that's the thing. Does it appear that they don't like Notre Dame in the Brian Kelly situation? And they're
I mean, are they holding it against them?
Are they holding it against them? Because I like Oklahoma State. I like the way they're playing football. I don't know if they're – I don't think they're better than Notre Dame right now.
No.
I don't think they are.
And maybe that's just history because we've never looked at the Cowboys being that way.
Right.
True. It's never been Oklahoma State. It's always been Oklahoma or, you know, Texas or, you know, name your other Big 12 school other than Oklahoma State. It's almost like we put them on the same level as Kansas.
Man, we got a lot of games coming up this weekend that could shape this out really well.
And that's what makes this one fun, this weekend fun. Saturday, I mean, Sunday, it's almost like, I don't really care, NFL, just do your thing. You know, but Saturday's, you know, hey, put away the honey-do list, tell your wife that you're sick or whatever you need to do to stay home and just watch, 8 hours, 10 hours of football?
If you get a little chaos, if you really get chaos on Saturday, real mess, right? I'm really curious as to how far the pundits, the people, you know, the Kirk Herbstreets of the world and the, you know, Pete Futek and all, how many people are just going to say that's enough? Like depending on where they land these teams, because there, again, I always say this, I criticize Jay Billis and Dick Vitale and everybody during the Seth Davis, during the NCAA tournament, because I don't care if somebody can't get into a 68 team field, but I do care if you can't get into a 4-team field. If you deserve it, that's a little different. And I wonder how, if there's just a mess and they go and they start plucking 2-loss teams and you're going, all right, fine. Alabama, you can come in and maybe Michigan with 2 losses. All right. And then, you know, Cincinnati 1 loss. You're right. You can't come in because we never really liked you in the first place. We're almost forced to like you. What if all of that starts popping up? Then they go with Notre Dame and they're like, oh, well, Notre Dame didn't even play. Come on in, stupid Irish. Like the way the committee acts towards Notre Dame because of this Brian Kelly thing, I'm curious to what they're going to do with them if all this sort of stuff break down.
Or even if Alabama does lose and it's not a close game, do they have the cojones to leave them out of the top four? Do they have can they justify going, you know what? Yeah, Alabama is still better than Oklahoma State, even though Oklahoma State just won the Big 12.
I don't think so. I'm curious about that, but I hope that they would go, all right, Alabama's offensive line wasn't very good against Auburn. They barely beat the Tigers, a 6-6 team, by the way. Auburn is a 6-6 team right now. They barely beat them, and then Georgia controlled the game from the start, and Alabama was never in it. I think they would say, okay, we can't. Because if they did, then I'm telling you, every conference commissioner outside of Greg Sankey is going to go destroy this system. If Alabama can do that in back-to-back games and still still get into this thing, then we're blowing this system up. Because there is no excuse for that. You know, Alabama, I mean, I had the joy of listening to that game while I was driving through Alabama on Saturday to the 2 broadcasts. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing in terms of just Bryce Young getting sacked or Bryce Young getting chased or Bryce Young knocked a pass getting knocked down. And it just sounded like they were just absolutely being beaten at the front of the line. And that's not how Alabama has always played. I'd be really, really interested to see. But I don't know. I don't root for chaos for chaos sake, but I'm curious in the story that's going to be written on Sunday if some of these games don't go the way we think they're going to go. All right, it is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Again, join us there if you'd like to chime in on the program as we continue on Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 1997 on a Throwback Thursday. This hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. What is this song again?
Foolish Games.
Oh, okay. Who sings it?
Jewel,
okay.
Kind of dominated.
Is Jewel still
the late
kicking
90s?
Around?
She's still alive.
She's still alive, but I mean, does she still perform?
Maybe Casinos Now? I don't know.
Maybe Casinos Now. Is that the mark of shame for a singer?
No, it's the retirement tour.
Right? That's still a good gig if you can get it right?
It is. Casinos pay well.
They do pay well. Like, I went to a casino one time. I forget where I was, because I sometimes just will go into one wherever I'm at. And I saw Chuck Negron of Three Dog Night was on the... And I was like, That all right. Chuck Negron's here. All right.
It is. I know. It's a way for them to, I guess, because that's, listen, that's where their people are now.
Yeah, that's right.
Their people
that's
aren't going to be, you know, selling out arenas or anything like that. It's going to be a small club or a casino.
By the way, speaking of that, have you seen these commercials with, I think we talked, Jimmy J.J. Walker and William Shatner? They're doing something with Medicare.
Yeah.
And you can get, do you know why they're on these ads? Because those are the relatable celebrities to the people they're talking
yep.
to. Right? Like, those are the people, like if you're 65, 70 years old and you see Jimmy J.J. Walker on TV telling you to call a number to see if you get a Medicare benefit, you're like, all right,
well,
dynamite.
Like, you know, for the longest time, you know, you saw Will from Brindley doing reverse mortgages or
right,
Tom
exactly.
Selleck doing reverse
Absolutely.
Mortgages. And,
yeah.
You know, because that's who their constituents are,
yeah,
for lack
exactly.
of a better word.
They're like, hi, I'm Justin Timberlake. Have you thought about a reverse mortgage as you head to retirement? That's not going to work.
Yeah, they'll be like, who's that?
Right? Exactly.
No.
Who's this young punk telling me to get a reverse mortgage, whatever yeah. that is?
And he's covered in tattoos.
He's covered in tattoos.
Yeah, that's going to be ours.
Exactly. The only tattoo I ever got was when I crossed the equator with the Navy with a 64th. That's the people, right?
I mean, when we're at that age, reverse mortgage is going to be pitched by who, you know?
That's a great question. Who from my life could pitch me something at 65
to
act? It's going to
be Ross from Friends.
You know who it would be? Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman
could tell me to do anything at 65. I'll go, I watched that guy forever. I'm calling that number right now. Lori, give me the phone. I'm going to call to see about our future Medicare problems. Jason Bateman told me to do that. That's where we're headed. Wake up call.